Joe, welcome back for another episode, a surprise episode of the Scenario Sports. I'm your host, Matt Whitener, here on behalf of the SOLC Network. This is a show that I didn't intend to have to do today. It's going to commemorate the unfortunate but honored passing of one Hank Aaron. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to interview Mr. Aaron early in my career. Interview is to overstate it in a great way. I got a chance to ask a question of him in a presser, but it was a moment that definitely stands out in my career. It was absolutely as nervous as I've ever been to be 20 yards away from a person, but to have their attention for that time in space. So beautiful thing there, an incredible career that he had. I just want to lay out a couple of the things of the person we're going to talk about in this show. We've got a fantastic group of people that are going to join us for the show today. From ESPN, we've got a host on the Sports Reporters and author of a biography about Hank Aaron, one Mr. Howard Bryant is going to join us. Also, two guests that we've had in the past here, Jason Klinkscales and also Michael Tillery, will join us to give different perspective on their experience with baseball, with Hank Aaron being a part and a driving factor of that. But, you know, when we talk about Hank Aaron, what really gets locked in is the 755 home runs he hit, the 715th being the most famous of them all, the one that passed Babe Ruth at the end of one of the more heated races on both a baseball and also from a civil rights stance that he did when he set the all-time home run record. It's a moment that meant a lot more than just a baseball record. And ultimately saying, Hank Aaron was a lot more than just a baseball player. We're going to talk a lot about that, but before we go in, I want to frame a little bit of the baseball player that we're talking about here. We're talking about the all-time leader, all-time in RBIs and extra base hits, and in total bases in a career. Who sits in the top five all time of home runs, of hits, and of runs scored. If you took away every home run he ever hit, however, he'd still be over 3,000 hits for his career. There's a lot more to him than just a hammer that gave him his namesake. Going down even further, 25 All-Star selections, which is incredible. 14 years of hitting over 300 and 15 years of 30 home runs or more. 8 seasons within that 15 of him seeing 40 or more home runs. You know, he broke the all-time record in home run record in 1974. And there's many that will still say, it depending on what side of the alley you stand on regarding Barry Bonds, that he still is the all-time home run king. He is also curiously one of the greatest, if not the greatest player, to only be a single-time MVP. He won his only MVP in 1957. However, he finished in the top three 7 different times in his career. He had the distinction of being one of the surviving members of the Negro Leagues that went on to be a shining example of what Black ball players could be if given the same opportunity as whites in the game. He made his debut as an 18-year-old in 1951 with the Indianapolis Clowns, 2 years before he made his MLB debut with the Milwaukee Braves. His legacy is ironclad. You know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, obviously. One of those many cases where you look at why did it take so long to get somebody to 100%. I don't see how anybody has any doubt about Hank Aaron being worthy of the Hall of Fame. His legacy continues on with the Hank Aaron Award that's given since 1999 to the top hitter in each league in the major leagues. And also his legacy continues on touching young African-American players with the Hank Aaron Academy that goes on every year in Atlanta that brings together some of the best young prep Black baseball players to compete against each other in the area. But he also was one of the first minorities to reach executive management level in Major League Baseball, which he did shortly after entering the Hall of Fame in the Braves front office. And, you know, back in 2002, he became a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom in a very fitting and I think overly deserved award. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Hank's impact on the on the world at large today, what his career meant. But it's definitely a somber day and news that swept across the globe, really, about the passing of, who I would consider to be baseball's ultimate statesman. A presence that superseded just baseball and just sports, but crossed over into so much more. He was the home run king, but he truly, those roots just mean as much as where he came from in the ranks of the impoverished ranks of Mobile, Alabama. Howard Bryant's going to give a lot of information about just how impoverished he was when we talk about that and talk about some of the roots that his book grew from. You know, but an example of, you know, that rags to riches royalty that speaks in a definitive way of the African-American experience, I feel like, and what he became. You know, he became a superstar in the segregated Deep South, in a time that ran parallel to the civil rights movement that was happening at that time. And he became one of the first athletes, African-American athletes, that was respected, if you will, across the aisle. So I'd say a lot, because it's just so much to say that I don't know how you encompass all of that in one conversation. So I'm going to give the conversation back. This is my conversation, my episode here, a special episode of Scenario Sports with Howard Bryant, Jason Klingscales, Michael Tillery, focusing on the life and the legacy of Henry Aaron. So I hope you enjoy, and I hope that if you have any questions or any comments about it, please hit us up, and we will do what we can to get back to you about it. Peace, y'all. All right, welcome back for another episode of The Scenario Sports. I'm your host, Matt Whitener. Appreciate everybody that's taking a little bit of time to log in and take a listen to this today. Not the show I intended to have up for us next. Got the unfortunate news earlier this morning that the legend in every sense of the word, Mr. Hank Aaron, passed at the age of 86. It's the type of event that I believe needs to be commemorated, but also needs to be celebrated. And I couldn't think of a better group of people to bring together to do that today. So I definitely want to get around to that and introduce all the people that are joining us for today's program. First of all, I want to shout out to my good friend, longtime, Mr. Michael Tillery of Starting5.net. Mike, how's it going?
All right, Matt. Honored, man. Always a pleasure.
Hey, I appreciate you being here. Next, moving on. Who's becoming a more regular, like, I think I might have hoodwinked him into being like a co-host almost on enough of these shows now. We've got another longtime associate of mine, Mr. Jackson Pinkscales.
How's it going, gentlemen? You're probably going to also have another guest host, hopefully not so much, my toddler son. So, yeah, he's unhappy today for a different reason, but, you know, happy to be here again as usual.
We get him started early, man. Hey, he's just like going through the ropes early on. He going to scream like that if you go down this journalism way of life one day anyway. Hey. So get him started early.
All right.
Last but absolutely not least, we've got from ESPN, you've seen him on the sports reporters and also the author of The Last King, A Life of Henry Aaron. Honored to have Mr. Howard Bryant here with us today.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for having me on. I apologize with the background that my usual, I'm moving like right now. So my whole house looks like a warehouse, not lots of boxes and the rest of it. You don't want to see me like put the camera on flip. So the mirror is the best. Yep. Did we lose somebody? We lose Matt?
I think Matt, yes.
Matt, go on.
Oh, I'm the host now.
Yeah, you're the host now.
Yes, it says I'm the host, which is a frightening thing. I'm the captain now. Matt's coming back. There you go.
Just dropped right then in that moment.
Yeah, it was just you. I became the host, and that was a scary thought. I haven't hosted a podcast in a few years, so.
Well, it kept recording. I'm going to go back. Howard, I'm going to do your intro again, because I know we'll be able to save what was there. And last but absolutely not least, very, very honored and appreciative of him making time to join us today. You've seen him on the sports reporters on ESPN, definitely have read his work. He's also the author of The Last King, A Life of Henry Aaron, Mr. Howard Bryant. Howard, I appreciate you making the time to join us today.
No, my pleasure being here. Apologize for the background, but I'm moving the rest of the house. You don't want to see it. Lots of boxes. So if you can deal with the glare, then I'm good.
I think we're going to be okay. I got bamboozled.
It is empty there too. I have books. They're in boxes right now. Trust me.
Hey, I emphasize with you. I got bamboozled last.
Wow.
Going again.
Mr. Robotnik.
The gods are not with him right now.
Upgrade that Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that might be pop-up O'Neill out there.
Oh, man. Yeah, I went through this recently with some stuff myself, and it's kind of tough. But let's see. Am I the host again? Probably not. But I don't know if Matt would want me to keep on. I can probably do that. I feel bad. Let me text him real quick, see what's going on. That could probably... Yep, I'm the host now. Oh, now I'm not the host anymore. Oh, I want credit.
In 2 years, I've been living here, and it kicks in right now. My apologies. It kept
in there.
I was just gonna say, do you want me to be the host at the moment when you hop out, or but then it just kicks you back in. So I didn't know if you want me to sort of take over.
No.
See, like right now.
Well. I would say, you know, Howard, since you're the expert here, given you wrote that book, and an awesome book, everybody in the world should read this book. You know, you got to spend time with him, man. Just could you talk about your experience with him, you know, the man and the athlete?
Well, the man always comes first. There's no question. This is a giant we're talking about, and the giant, not just in terms of what he did on the field, but just as a human being. I mean, I called Henry, you talked 3 weeks ago. We were talking, I called him to wish him a happy new year. His birthday is coming up. It was February 5th. We were talking about getting together. We were working on another project together. And the thing about it is that every time I would talk to him, he would say, hey man, you got to call me more often. Just call more often, check in more often. And I was like, yeah, but you're Henry Aaron. I don't want to impose a Henry Aaron. And he was just so gracious and so down always. I think one of the hardest things, and you know, Mike, you know this as well, when you deal with professional athletes, I always say that the hardest thing about dealing with professional athletes is that no matter what, they always make you feel like you're part of their entourage, like you following them and like work for them. And Henry never did that. Henry never did anything like that. He ended up asking you more questions about yourself than he was at. It was just always so basic. I remember the first time I went to his house, I remember it specifically because they were going to go, it was 2008. They were about to go early vote in the election, and the Phillies were playing the Brewers in the playoffs in the division series, 2008. And I'm talking to his wife. We're doing a little, you know, interview for the book. And here comes Henry down in the bathrobe making himself a hot dog. He's just, you know, and had no pretensions about him. And most guys, even when they're trying to be unpretentious, they're being pretentious, right? Yeah. And Henry's not like that. He never, and even working on the book, he never asked me for a dime. Never asked me for any money. It wasn't like, you know, charging you for interviews and the rest of it. It was like we had a talk. We talked about stuff, and I asked him, I would like to do this book, and he wasn't really interested. He didn't really want to talk to me. And he was convinced that the only reason people had interest in him was because of Barry Bonds. This was a couple of years earlier.
Right.
And Bonds was about to break the record, and he thought everybody was trying to set him up, that they wanted him to be the one to go criticize Bonds. And he was like, oh, so y'all want to use me to criticize another black man? I'm not going to do that. At the same time, he also understood that if he said nothing, then it looked like he was condoning drugs, and he wasn't. So he was like, I'm in a lose-lose situation. And I said to him, you're Henry Aaron. I'm calling to talk to you about you. I don't care about Barry Bonds. And that it's really interesting that at that period, he viewed himself through that lens, and he thought that the public through that lens. And I was like, no, there's so much more to you than your home run record. That's what I care. I said, my question for you is, do you want to be known? And he said, of course I want to be known. But every time I talk, the media gets it wrong. Then they correct it. Then I got to correct the correction. So I just decided to keep to myself.
Howard, that's an awesome point that you bring up, because it was something that I thought about today. And when people talk about Hank Aaron, obviously you go to 755 right away. You think about the visage of him going around the bases after he broke Babe Ruth's record. But there's so much more to the man than just that. And I think in some odd ways, he was a little bit of an underrated legend, if that's possible.
Yeah, I think there are two things that play into that, and I think you're 100% right, Matt. I think the first thing is technology. When you think about great players, you immediately think about Julius Erving in flight, in his prime, doing his Dr. J thing. When you think about Michael Jordan, you think about Michael Jordan in his prime, doing his Michael Jordan thing, right? Left hand, right hand against the Lakers, right? When you think about Willie Mays, you think about 54 in the, you know, making the catch in his prime. Mm-hmm. But when you think about Hank Aaron, you think about him breaking the record at 7:15. He's 40 years old. Mm-hmm. He's not the average, or he's not running. He's not at full flight. He's not 6 foot, 175 pounds, just killing dudes. He's 40 years old, you know, sort of loping around the bases because his career is at the tail end, not at the beginning. So in the television age, you don't get Hank Aaron the athlete the same way you got Willie Mays the athlete, the same way you get Michael Jordan the athlete, or the rest of those guys. His enduring moment is essentially when the athletic part of his career was over. So I think that's really hurt.
And I think I think that's an awesome call out, because I think that when you look at sustained greatness in a lot of ways, Hank Aaron and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar have a lot of parallels there. I mean, it's just such a long string of it. It's hard to lock into one moment, if there is one. You talk about all those great moments that you have there. I remember being an early teenager on ESPN Classic and them having the old Home Run Derby on. And Hank is a young, young man then. But
yeah, wow.
That's probably that peak. That's the at Julius Erving afro Hank Aaron, though, right? You know, I mean, that's when he's the guy. But when you look at his record and you look at what he accomplished, you know, he makes his MLB debut in 1954, back when, you know, well before you had the type of access to clips and to being able to see the things that are there. But, you know, this is a man that was a 25-time All-Star. You know, I mean, that's it's unapproachable. I mean, that's when you talk about records that aren't getting approached, that's the definition of one. But all of his greatest things are based in longevity when it's just on the baseball field and when it's there. And that was what his strength was just being a pillar. Michael, I want to ask you, we talked about that and we kind of mentioned where that appreciation for what Hank did. How do you feel about what the perception was for Hank? Not necessarily just at the end of his career, but for the subsequent generations that have come.
You know, being how old I am, you know, being born out of the civil rights era, 68, and having really the first memories of life being assassinations, right? You know, and the only sports highlight that I remember seeing outside of Franco Harris's, you know, tiptoe catch was Hank Aaron hitting that home run and seeing all of the people surround him as he rounds the bases. So it's like you can hear the thunder off his cleats. After seeing that highlight, you know, when you go to really research the moment, you start to hear about the death threats. You know, him saying he got millions of letters. Like, it really shocks your soul. It makes you see sports as more than it is, that you're seeing on TV. You know, you're feeling the soul of it. Like, I've coined the phrase soul model, and it's all over the place now. Before I became a writer, I called Hank Aaron he was the first person I called soul model. And it was because of what he endured, the bitterness that he had, and all the stuff that he had to really just take and just affect his latter years. Like, you know, Howard, you know, we've interviewed so many people, right? The older guys sometimes don't want to talk because, as Howard said earlier, they don't want to be misconstrued. You know, so it was a shame. Like, him and Oscar Robertson are those guys for me, you know, that you can sense the bitterness, you know, but we need more of them for history. So as you were talking about earlier, the kids are affected. You know, it's up to us right here to make sure that in this moment that we document who Hank Aaron was and who he was to us, who he was before us, and who he will be to the children who see baseball right now as Mike Trout?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember a couple of things. Number one, I am so sick of the word dignity. And whenever you hear people talk about Henry Aaron, they talk about his dignity and how dignified he was in the face of racism and how dignified Henry Aaron was in the face of death threats. What are they really saying? What they're really saying is they would rather talk about his response to the hostility he faced than the hostility itself. Mm. So what they're doing is all this talk about his disposition is essentially taking the people who created that disposition off the hook. Why on earth did he need to be so dignified just to hit home runs? What you're really saying is to white people in general, you did this. You took something from him that was supposed to be the highlight of his life, and you took it from him, and you wanted him to smile about it and forgive you for it. And when you think about this country, we think about it in terms of, at least for me, Henry Aaron did everything that the United States asks of a person. They tell you to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Henry Aaron's father built his house with his bare hands with spare wood and nails that he found from vacant lots. Mm. That qualifies. They tell you to go out and work hard, and hard work pays off, and not to complain. Henry Aaron played 23 seasons in the major leagues and never went on the disabled list, right? Mm. For all the time people talk about black athletes not hustling and not this and not that, he never even went on the disabled list, not once, right? They tell you to pay your dues and to be professional. And Henry Aaron, his attitude had always been, don't bring your problems to the ballpark and don't bring the ballpark home, right? And so for all of these things that he did, for doing exactly what America asked him to do, he got an FBI detail. He got a kidnapping threat on his daughter. He got death threats on his life. And he had people trying to kill him for doing everything that America asked him to do. And
Howard, I wanted to build on that point. I wanted to build on that point that you had right there really quick, though, because I think that that's the lost legacy, right? That when you hear people say, you know, we want you to celebrate his dignity and things like that, I think that's an amazing call out. But that's also the part of, let's go back a little bit further, Jackie Robinson's life that gets left out. We always celebrate those things and don't want to call it back. So I think that's an amazing thing to call to the center, just about how the ramifications of his success and what that really meant on who he became subsequently.
Well, the real question is, do you want to know the life that I've lived or don't you? Or do you need me to tell you something that's going to make you feel better about yourself? When The Last Hero came out in 2010 and I was on book tour, there was one very specific character trait of that book tour. And it was the number of white people in the audience who, while I was signing books, came up to me and really wanted to make eye contact with you. And they really wanted you to know that they were the good ones. We weren't the ones who did this to him. They wanted you to know that he was our hero and we loved him. And especially when I was in Milwaukee, I said, yes, but you do know also that Henry integrated your all-white suburb of Mequon. He integrated one of your neighborhoods and you guys had a petition to keep him from it. So whoever it was, whether it was you or whether it was your father or your grandfather or your grandmother or your mother, whoever it was, did this to him. And when they won the World Series in 57, he and Frank Torrey, Joe Torrey's older brother, they go to the YMCA, and the manager of the YMCA doesn't let Henry Aaron, who hit 393 in the World Series, they don't let him in the YMCA. And Frank Torrey says, but this is Hank Aaron. And that guy was like, sorry, but we can't let that happen. You can't come in. It's not my rule, but no blacks in the YMCA.
Yeah.
And so what was happening during that book tour were these kids who wanted me to know, or could I pass on to Henry, how much they loved him. And that it was almost as if they were looking at me for absolution or asking me to pass on the opportunity for absolution to Henry. And I thought that was sort of fascinating because once more, it's like, what's the best word for it? The best word for it is, it was important to them that he saw them a certain way, even though they benefited from all of the things that prohibited him in his life. To Michael's point about these things that get taken from you, right? That generation, the reason why they were so hardcore is because they had to live in an environment, in an industry that is supposed to be the meritocracy. You score 10, I score 9, you win, right? But in that world, they got something taken from them. And you can't get that time back. And we still want them to smile about it.
Yeah, just to chime in quickly on
Bill Russell is that guy for me. You know, I walk up to Bill Russell at the finals and, you know, I'm shaking like a little kid. I want to grab the bottom of his pants, right? And I just said, Mr. Russell, can I ask you a few questions? And I'm an upcoming writer. And he wanted no parts of me, you know, just no parts, because he just didn't want to rehash the stuff. And it was the Lakers, Boston. It was the wheelchair game, matter of fact, you know?
That was,
Yeah, it was that game. And, you know, that's why Howard, you know, was the first person I thought about when Matt asked me was you, because of your excellent book. You know, I mean, I really do think that people need to hear what you say today more than most, because you said it right, good brother. You know, I really appreciate you writing that book, because it's right now it's relevant.
Well, here, thank you, man. But here's the question, right? I mean, like, let's put this on the table. When I was working on that book, I wanted to go talk to Frank Robinson. And Frank Robinson, as we all know, was an asshole. He's Frank Robinson. He's an asshole, right? There's no way around it. I wanted to talk to Frank because I wanted to talk to all of Henry's contemporaries. So he's managing the Nationals. Everybody's set up. The whole thing set up through the team. I'm supposed to go there. I'm living in DC at the time anyway. I drive over to the stadium. I sit down to talk to Frank. And the first thing Frank says is, I've decided not to talk to you today. Nah, I ain't no interview. I'm like, yeah, but I came down here and they told me you were gonna talk. Nah, I ain't talking to you. Okay, why do you get to make money off me? How come you get to make money off my name? I'm like, and why do you get to make millions off of me? I was like, millions? And his whole thing was, you don't get to profit off of me. Everybody else has been stealing from me. And I said, you know, respect, you know, for your position. I said, but number one, whoever told you I was making millions, I was like, with all due respect, sir, I'm not writing about you. I'm writing about Henry Aaron. That's the first thing. Number two, I lose money writing about Black people. I write about Black people to keep our stories alive, because this is who we are. And at some point we have the right, don't we, to tell our own stories. Who do we belong to? Do we belong to each other, or do we belong to the white people who buy all the tickets and who control media and who control everything? That's the reason why we do this. And so we had to agree to disagree. And then the same thing happened with Don Newcombe, and the same thing happened with Willie McCovey, and brothers from all that generation. And so when Frank died, I was talking to Dusty about this, and I was like, I was mad at Frank. And I was really mad at Frank because Frank took his stories with him. And Frank deserved, Frank was mad about not being celebrated, but Frank didn't want to be celebrated. Frank deserved to be celebrated. Frank wouldn't let you celebrate him. And so I understand Bill Russell's point of view on that. I understand the position, which is why I love Henry even more. Because what Henry was really saying is, I want you to understand me, but y'all can't get it right. And so I said, I'm asking for the opportunity to get it right. And he gave it to me.
I want to actually get into that, because when I read that book, you know, there was a period of time for about maybe 2 to 3 years in which every book or every other book I read was a sports biography. And, you know, your book on Mr. Aaron was the second to last book I read. And the thing that got me, that I remember the most of anything else, it seems weird at the time now, think about it, is how you pointed out that he wanted to be known as Henry Aaron and not Hank. Mm-hmm. And I always found that to be, even that was like maybe the second thought I had this morning, was when I'd seen Hank Aaron pass, Hank Aaron died. And it's like, that's how we, especially those of us who didn't see him play, we knew him as Hank. But your book told me, no, he was Henry. Could you speak about how important that was? Because I feel like, you know, Matt and I are the younger generation as journalists, bloggers, and all, and editors and the like, where we have a better understanding of how white media people, how white media acts in terms of black athletes. But that was the last part that I think we probably didn't fully understand until we started hearing more of this over the years of certain athletes. This is my name. This is my name. But to me, when I heard you say he was Henry Aaron, that stood out to me. And I stopped calling him Hank from that point on. So yeah. I'd love to know your sort of point of view on that one.
Well, it was a Hank is a composite. Hank is how the public viewed him. He never called himself Hank. His family never called him. His friends never called him Hank. Media called him Hank, and he became Hank Aaron. In fact, when he was in the when he was on the field, fans would call up Hank, 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 and he would very rarely turn around. But if somebody said Henry, then he knew that that person was probably from Mobile or somewhere or knew him personally, and then he would turn around. Because that's his name, right? It's something so basic as to somebody calling you by your name.
Yeah.
And so that was really important too, because the whole conversation about trying to get his blessing and to convince him to work with me on this was to get it right. Mm-hmm. And what is the most obvious thing that you have to first get right than somebody's name?
Absolutely. As somebody whose name gets mangled all the time by people for different reasons, it's one of the things I become adamant about in my life. Like, nope, this is my name. Don't mess it up. It is a part of my identity. It's who I am. So I would expect that for other people as well. So when I quit that line, it meant a lot to me personally. Like, this man said, my name is my name.
Well, and the publisher didn't care. The publisher was like, no, he's Hank Aaron to everybody. So we should call this book A Life of Hank Aaron. And I was like, can't do it. So that was the first fight we had in the publication of that book.
You know, there's no right time for like what happened today. At the same time, very few people have left as complete of a legacy in as many different lanes as Mr. Aaron did. One thing, however, that I'm really appreciative of is that of recent times, we had the, I still have a rant I've got to have about this, about how Major League Baseball decided to declare the Negro Leagues as being an official professional year league this year. And I saw a lot of people celebrating that day, and I got upset because I said, I don't need you to tell me that. You know, I grew up down the street from a guy who played in the leagues and told me the stories about them and knew what it was about. However, my opinion about that calmed down when I saw what Mr. Aaron said about this is a day that is something to be proud of, you know, something that we appreciate, that recognition, because he is one of the last, he was one of the last, I'm gonna have to get used to that, flame, the torchbearers of that part of both the Black experience and the baseball experience. I'd be curious to know our just, you know, kind of as that flame is dying down, how much of that had to do with what formed his image and how he went about the game himself?
Well, it's a good question. And I disagreed with it, and I didn't always disagree with Henry, but I had issues with what MLB did. I think it was wrong. I still think it's wrong for lots of different reasons. And I especially think it's wrong because Henry wouldn't have been included in that because the cutoff was 1948, I think.
I think it was 40. I think it was 48, the year after Jackie integrated.
Back in 48, and Henry played for the Clowns in 52. So his Negro League career was not considered based on their ridiculous, crazy ass criteria. So that was that. But I think that the part of it that struck me with that group, a really special group of people, for that very special moment in time, is what was being asked of them. Is that people like to think that integration was this clean thing, that where Jackie came in and then we were all good. By 1951, there was still only like 5 black major leaguers. There weren't that many. I mean, I think from 1949, 50 to 52, 3 seasons that no team integrated, no new team integrated. So the players are recognizing that, okay, we're here, but you still don't want us. You know, so it really does shape how these guys are looking at their game. They're looking at, like, once again, this whole question of meritocracy. How can it be a meritocracy when you're still deciding who gets to play based on something other than if we can play?
And that's a phenomenal point about that. And it's one of the things that upsets me the most about when people ask the question now about why aren't more black people, more African Americans being a part of the game. And I want to rewind real quick because you mentioned Frank Robinson. And one of the great privileges I had in the very early parts of my career was I got an opportunity to ask a question, one single question of Mr. Aaron, but also Mr. Robinson at the Negro League Museum in Kansas City. As soon as I found out about the passing of Henry, I went in and found my Monarchs hat. But it was hosted by Dave Winfield as well. So I got to ask them a question. And the question that I asked was, what are your opinions of what the presence is with young African-Americans and what can baseball be doing to make it be more relevant in the culture right now? And Mr. Aaron was a very calm person throughout it. He was very gracious about how he answered the questions. I'll never forget this though. He sat up in his seat when I asked that question and he put his hand out and stopped Frank Robinson from answering it too quickly. He said, we need to take it back to where we are at because it will not reach us the way it is structured right now. Michael, that's something that I know me and you have had many, many conversations about. But that's something that woke up that passion in Mr. Aaron. And I don't even need to explain what it did for Mr. Robinson after I asked that question, what his answer was. But what are your thoughts about that and about where we're at as we transition from Mr. Aaron and move the game forward now?
Well, you know, I've coached for 20 years. You know, I coached the 16 to 18 team when I was 19. You know, the sport means so much to me. You know, Reggie Jackson's 44 led me to Hank Aaron, which led me to Willie Mays, which led me to Oscar Charleston, which led me to Bullet Joe Rogan. You know, it is imperative. You know, I talked about earlier about, you know, us having a responsibility on this day. I'm glad you're doing this, Matt. You know, Matt, last time we talked, we were on that call. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I said to everyone is how many black sports writers, black baseball writers can you name outside of Wendell Smith? that chronicle the era, you know, the soul of it, the pain of it, the nothingness of it, you know, the Josh Gibson brain hemorrhage of it, you know, all of that is missing because there's not so many black baseball writers. And we talked about, you know, Justice Hill. I was so proud to see his column on MLB.com, you know, growing up, because you were searching for it. You know, a lot of the fields that I coached on are now, you know, fields with glass and basketball courts and everything else. You know, I remember fighting so many times with the city in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Delaware for permits just to practice on the fields. They did not want these black and brown kids to play baseball. You know, I had this stale field, you know, and then sometimes we would get ran off. You know, I talked about it earlier. You know, I coached two state championship games in all-star competition with seven players, you know?
It's the erosion of the game, too. I mean, it's led to that. And one thing that I absolutely believe is that if we're more tuned into where we were and what the game meant to our culture and to our society, and it's not just about how many home runs Hank Aaron hit, but it's about what they meant and the conditions that he hit them in and what he overcame to do it.
Yeah, well, what was Hank Aaron doing when he died, right? What was he doing? I mean, he was in the fight. In Mississippi, I think that's where he was. In Jackson, there are seven high schools that don't have a single baseball field. Mm. So what Henry was doing, 86 years old, here's Hank Aaron, he was working with a couple of different private organizations. He was building ball fields for those high schools at 86 years old. To Mike's point, to make sure that they had a place to play to grow the game, right? And the argument that you're constantly getting from people, and you hear this, it's the constant blaming of the erosion on blackness itself. Well, you know, black kids prefer basketball, they prefer football. If you put a ball in front of a kid, they're gonna play with it. And what you've done in this sport is they've made sure that that ball never comes to you anymore. Mm. And I was talking to Doug about this, and we were talking about, you know, this is a financial issue. If you go back and you look, say 1972, 73 to present, in terms of the actual raw dollars of physical infrastructure invested in the Dominican Republic for baseball, no wonder that's where you get players. If you look for players, you're going to find them. And Henry's generation and Reggie's generation is our generation, Mike. You had brothers playing the game. The next generation, erosion at the exact same rise of foreign infrastructure. And I always tell people, baseball is a white suburban game reinforced by foreign labor. That's the sport. It's not what it was, you know? It's not what it was where you had Jethro McIntyre out in Oakland and the Major League Scouting Bureau actually going to the high schools, you know? You actually had a guy, you know, there was a Yankee scout who was watching Simon Gratz High School. There was a Philly scout watching all these Philly high schools, right? Because their job was to find the talent. They don't do that anymore. They're not even looking at anymore. Talking to Ron Washington about this third base over at the Braves. And Wash was telling me that, and CeCe was saying the same thing, that the black players that you're going to get today, they're all the children of former pro players.
Yeah.
Whether it's Pat Mahomes or Tim Raines Jr. or all of them, they're all former, you know, or Delino DeShields kid is playing. They're all former big league kids. That's Howard, the black
power game. That's an awesome point. And you know, not too long ago, I've got a friend of mine whose son, he's a young black man. He just signed to pitch at Vanderbilt by the name of Christian Little. He left high school early to get there, and he's getting ready to start his freshman season here in a couple of months. We had him on, and we were talking, and he was just saying about how there is that undercurrent of young black players that want to play. But what, and the amazing thing about it, and I thought about this today, was that the game had to find them though. You know, it wasn't like back then when you would be able to do it. The game had to find them, and it is not made easy to find those black players that are in those leagues anymore.
Right. I mean, Like one of the things that baseball has never done very well, it doesn't do it with white players now, and it certainly didn't do it with black players back in the day or today, is are you willing to compete for talent?
Yes.
Right? Back in the day, you didn't have to compete for talent. You were the number one sport. You were the sport that paid the best. Mm-hmm. You were the sport that had the most visibility. And you had the history, especially if you were black. Your parents, they identified with baseball because that was a black industry.
Yes. Right.
Today, if you're Major League Baseball, you got to compete for these kids. Do you really want to compete? Or are you just going to give them to the other sports? And
or
that's why
the cheaper labor down in the Dominican.
Or it's the same point. They don't want to compete for them. So no. We'll take. I remember one day I was sitting with Billy Beane, the general manager of the A's, and he was bullshit about something. He was mad. It was 2000, spring training 2000. He was mad because my boy Gary Washburn wrote a piece about how if Terrence Long didn't make the roster, majority black city Oakland was going to have its baseball team, the Oakland A's, without a single African-American on the roster. And he lost his mind because he figured that G was calling him a racist. So he calls me into his office and I was like, one, I didn't write the story. What are you asking me for? And two, he was like, you think I'm a racist? I said, no, but I think the end result is inherently going to be racist. He's like, oh, bullshit. I said, Billy, look at it. You guys follow money. You can sign for one American player. You can sign 300 Dominican teenagers.
Mm.
You know? And he broke out this big binder with all the salaries. He's like, black players are the most expensive commodity in the sport. Look at Mike Cameron's salary. Look at what Torrey's making. Look at what Bonds is making. Look at what Griffey's making. I said, that's my point. You're making the same point I'm making. So in other words, you can't afford. He goes, do you think I don't want Mike Cameron on my team? I said, I'm not saying that you don't. I'm saying that the players themselves, if you're going to decide who you're going to spend your resources on, it ain't going to be on black players. It ain't going to be on black people. Just admit it.
It's an ugly truth, and it's a long bred one, and it's got roots in where we're at with the game now. Howard, I know that you've got some limited time here, so I don't want to overextend you. I would have this conversation for 3 hours. I would keep this going forever because there's so many places to go. But before we wrap up here, I would just love for everybody to kind of just, you know, whatever comes to mind, whatever it is that when we look back on this day and remember this to be the day that Henry Aaron left the earth, just what that legacy means to you and how maybe it individually impacted how you look at life or just the sporting world in general. Jason, I'll start with you down there.
Well, it's interesting because despite being from New York City, I'd loved baseball for most of my life, but I became a Braves fan for quite a while. And big part of the reason was actually because of Mr. Aaron. I didn't realize it indirectly until I became an adult. The Yankees and the Mets, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, they lost their blackness for quite a while. And then as the 90s, even though the Yankees became successful, other than Derek Jeter being half black, half white, there really wasn't, and David Justice came in later on, there were no black players that I connected to that I really gave a damn about, really on the Yankees. And certainly the Mets just weren't that good. But the Braves actually end up having like some of those black and brown faces alongside Chipper Jones and Bobby Cox. And that attracted me to them. And so I think people always thought it was a little bit weird being a kid from New York City who's rocking the Braves hat. And it's like, well, and it took me until I became an adult when I realized that's why. But that goes back to Leon Aaron. What Aaron did as a, not just as a player, but as a man. You know, I know that we don't really care for the word dignity anymore, but who he was as a person in terms of reaching out to the younger players, reaching out to younger generations and not being the embittered guys that we see, such as in the NBA with Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. He still believed in the game and loved the game and reached out to anybody about the game. And that was a lineage that he helped. Yeah, and that's a lineage he helped build. And I think that meant a lot to me, and it still means a lot, in which I'm not as much of a baseball fan anymore because I feel like that lineage is almost gone. And when you lose somebody of that kind of royalty as Mr. Aaron, I'm reminded of that a lot more, that where do we go now? Where do we go next? You know, yes, we still have Griffey and Bonds and the like, but with the way superstardom has sort of changed the access between fans, media, and the players, it's hard to start that connection. And I still think baseball, part of the reason why they're devoid of that connection with black fans, look, viewership has been down for decades amongst black people for this very reason. You don't give us a reason. You don't give us a reason to care anymore. Aaron gave people the reason to care about the game into the 80s and into the 90s. And I hope today is a chance for people to remember that and to maybe pick up that work that he did.
Amen to that. Michael, give me something that you got about the legacy and about Mr. Aaron.
Well, Jason just made a great point, you know, because I hope that the existing Black baseball players now get out and be more public and do the selfless work that needs to be done so that kids know the history. You know, and to your point earlier, Howard, when you spoke about, you know, them not wanting to pay the Black players. I mean, look how it has affected the stolen base. How many runs haven't been scored in Major League Baseball because it's either a strikeout or a home run now. You know, with I wanted to feel the sorrow today, you know. It's been on my mind all day long. You know, I wanted to make sure that personally I pay homage to him in remembrance of what he did, you know, like you were saying, you know, he was always out there in the public, you know, doing things. And Howard, you spoke about how he did it until he was 86, you know, which is incredible. You know, me wearing Reggie's number and Hank's number and the history ride that it took me on, like it was an epiphany when I found out that Hank's number was 44, you know? It's like, oh, wow. You know, and it just took me through history. I learned the game of baseball by a former Negro League player named Sam Harrison. And, you know, Sam would help coach me in different all-star competitions. I wanted to impart his wisdom onto the kids. You know, there was one time where he was arguing with the kids for not knowing how to bunt to where his teeth fell out at home plate, you know. And he picked his teeth up and kept on talking and screaming at these kids. And they were on the field, you know. He talked about Hank Aaron a lot. He talked about Willie Mays a lot. He talked about the Monarchs and the Clowns and all of that history, you know, playing for the Stars and, you know, the A's later on, you know. Hank was that for me. He was my link forward and past. I was a big Reggie Jackson fan, you know, when he hit the 63 home runs, I think he has, 63 or 73. I think Killebrew has 73, I think. But, you know, knowing those home run totals, having that little Franklin, little handheld thing that had all the stats and the Stan Musials and the Babe Ruths and the Hank Aarons and Willie Mays would jump out at me. You know, it gave me a sense of wanting to read that newspaper as it hit the door on Saturday mornings, you know, and eventually to become someone who wanted to chronicle sports and especially guys like Hank Aaron. You know, that's why I'm living vicariously through Howard in his book, because it's a so much important book for the legacy of Hank Aaron, because it was written the right way. Like, it's what you want to read. Like, when an athlete's on a locker room, somebody asks a stupid question, they're like, what? Because they're, it's a foreign thing to them, you know? And when we read stuff that you can relate to because you can visually see it, you know, it becomes important to you and it hits your soul. So again, Howard, I'm giving you all your flowers today, man, on that book, man.
It's just
how it is.
Yep. No, it's hard, man. And I'm sorry, I gotta go. My phone's gonna ring in 2 minutes, but I'll be real fast. And I'm just gonna say, I'm just grateful to him. I mean, He didn't have to do it. He could have been, nah, man, I've said what I had to say and gone back, and he didn't. And that told you that he still believed in what we were capable of as the people who are supposed to keep these stories going. We're supposed to tell these stories. I walk into bookstores and the very first thing I do when I go into the sports section of a bookstore is to see how many Black subjects are in there written by Black people. It's almost non-existent. Plenty of Black stories in there, not very many written by us.
And that's chicken without the seasoning on it right there, basically. And that's what we gotta stop.
Yeah, so I'm just him to let, you know, for letting me into his life and calling me a friend and reaching out and getting on me for not calling him. And that's, you take that with you for every day of your life.
That's a beautiful thing. And Howard, I appreciate you lending your time and your experience and everything that you do to the show today. I'm very appreciative and humbled of it. Michael, I appreciate you for playing a role in helping to bring this show together today and what you always do. I know that the players of that era, players like Mr. Aaron, would definitely be appreciative of you keeping that flame going. And Jason, I appreciate everything that you bring here too. Everybody, I appreciate you joining in here for our program today for the Scenario Sports. Everybody, be best, be blessed, be the best you can be. And absolutely, rest in peace to Mr. Aaron. Peace, y'all.
Peace.